We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/lawless. Just go to Indeed.com/lawless right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/lawless. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tupac! Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lawless, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue colored glasses. This show will be talking VAR pearl clutching, MLS goal fests, Ten Hag's survival, Haji machine that he is, Dest out, Boca River, messy destruction, fall of England, Tupac and Biggie payoff, Phoenix chicken wings, manhunt, and so much more. But first, joining us always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how you doing on this Monday, April 22nd in the year 2024?
I'm doing well. We have a blockbuster show today.
We got all sorts of stuff happening. And that's because on the field and off the field, for that matter, all sorts of stuff was happening over the last days since we spoke. Have you watched anything?
I've got one thing today. Okay. Last night, HBO premiered season 2 of The Jinx. Season 1 is one of the seminal seasons in true crime history. It's an incredible blemish on Kat's resume that she hasn't seen it. I am skeptical of season 2. We've been here before with Making a Murderer or Tiger King. Sometimes you try to squeeze more out of a story than is really there, but we'll see.
It's the continuation of the story, or it's a whole nother story in terms of trying to get a franchise type of thing going here?
Continuation of the story.
Continuation of the story. Okay. All right. I will check that out. But you think it lives up to billing after the first season lived up to all of the praise?
First season was incredible.
Got it. Okay. But they might have jumped the shark here and bit off too much. Let's see. We talked, I think, over the last week about Manhunt, which is on Apple, if I'm not mistaken. And episodal follows the manhunt for John Wilkes Booth after he assassinated Abraham Lincoln. I've watched this. I intended to binge it. I'm not impressed, Mossy. I don't want to say it's boring, but I think that's the only world that I keep circling back to. And there's a lot of other stuff that's going on in it. Well, first off, the casting is interesting. And look, if you are a comedian or somebody in a specific lane and genre, and you try to branch out and be something else, a la Jim Carrey and others, That's no problem. But this is obviously not a comedy. This is a drama. And there are people that we associate with comedies that are put into not just roles, but very prominent roles. And the trick is for any of these actors to try to do is to get us to forget who you are from a comedic standpoint and accept who you are from a dramatic standpoint. And too often, I cannot do that with some of these actors.
Yeah, Patton Oswalt in particular. Very good comedian. I've seen him perform here in L.A., but that was odd casting for sure.
It is odd. And it's not that he or anybody else can't do it, but in this particular vehicle, I just don't think that it works. And I think ultimately it hurts the production.
I thought it was good, not great. I do recommend the book that the show is based on, also called Manhunt. I read it several years ago. Very good book.
Yeah, it's all right. I might not finish it. Wow. And that's a problem.
So you're going to be wondering if they caught Booth.
Yeah, I'll see what ultimately happens with that. All right, my friend, we're going to talk a little bit more and pay off some stuff later on in this show that we've talked about in the last couple of weeks. But shall we light this candle?
Let's do it.
All right, where should we start?
We begin with some unfortunate news involving a prominent U.S. men's national team player. Sergiño Dest picked up a knee injury in training with PSV on Saturday. It's been called a serious injury that's going to keep him out for an extended period. We haven't seen an official timetable yet, but it looks like he will miss the Copa America this summer. How big a loss is that for the U.S.?
It's huge because for, well, not all his faults. He has very few faults. As a matter of fact, I think he is, when he is healthy, an in-pen starter for this national team and has been vital in terms of up and down that right-hand side, providing, you know, an incredible talent and ability with the ball, incredible speed. And the big problem for Greg Berhalter and this team is nobody, like the number nine position, has yet stepped up and even challenged, even remotely challenged. And at times in the past when we have seen players play in that position, the Scallies and stuff, they have not shown that they're even close to stepping into his shoes right now. So it also does provide Greg Berhalter with possibilities of doing some different things.
Yes, let's remind you, in the Nations League semifinals against Jamaica, Dest was suspended, Joe Scally started and was so poor that Greg Berhalter yanked him off at halftime and moved Weston McKennie to right back in the second half. We should also note that during a guest appearance on this pod, Stu Holden advocated for Timmy Weah to be the U.S.'s right back. We've moved one step closer to that potentially being a reality. While Fran Arthur, who's visiting us today, also dropping takes, she thinks the U.S. should play in a back three in light of this injury.
Well, that would, in a strange way, that would put a value on Dest, the likes of which we have never seen, in a fundamental change of structure and lineup based simply on the unavailable Dest. So that's an amazing compliment in a strange way. I'm not saying that the U.S. under Greg Berhalter can't and at times has shown the ability to play in a back three, but in this tournament to start out with that, it's interesting. I do like the way a thing we have seen that, and we're trying to fit a lot of players on the field, and that's one way to get it. It would also be fundamentally changing the mindset of the way you're going out in that, you know, not that Dest is, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, just completely defensive. He's completely not, as a matter of fact. But this, I think it would, I'm up for it, actually. If we're going to do it, let's, I guess, go big and go home this summer in terms of having way a play out there on that right-hand side, and then you could have a, you know, you could have a Weah and Reyna type of situation out there. You could have all sorts of things. But if and when Weah is there, it's for his ability to get forward and to almost, to Fran's point, be a back three with his ability to go forward.
Great to see Fran Arthur, by the
wonderful,
way. Our colleague
wonderful,
here at Fox visiting
wonderful.
Us.
She's doing great. She's telling me about the craziness that is her son, evidently a burgeoning outside back with the energy. So maybe, who knows? A little early now, but, you know, had he been around, if he's around in 15 years, he can certainly take old man Dest's spot with no problem.
And Fran, as a Barcelona fan, be interested to see what this means for Dest at club level. It sounds like right. He's leaning towards signing permanently with PSV. He's still on loan from Barcelona. If this is a serious injury, I've seen some reports that he could be out as much as 9 months. That's not confirmed, but would PSV still want to sign him permanently? What would that mean for his club future?
It's just the worst timing for him and for the U.S., and for, you know, the individual player, and who knows what he is going to be. You know, we talked so much about Tyler Adams and the long-term injury that they suffer, and are they going to be or can they be the same type of player coming back? And so that remains to be seen. But next man up, who knows? Maybe there'll be somebody that will step up this summer. I know I had X'd, I guess you call it, this morning with somebody who was making the case that the Olympics are more important. But who knows? Maybe we see somebody in the Olympics, or maybe we even see someone with Greg Berhalter that we haven't talked about or that we haven't seen has shown the ability to step into that position. Use this opportunity, because for every person's loss, there's another person's opportunity, especially when it comes to sports, and whether it's injury or whether it's behavior off the field, whether it's new coaching, all that kind of stuff. When that opportunity arises, as it has happened here on that right back position, you better be ready to step up. But we haven't seen anything yet. So hopefully we'll see something this summer. Where should we go now?
FA Cup semis this past weekend. On Saturday, Manchester City beat Chelsea 1-0. Bernardo Silva with a late winner. Then Sunday, Manchester United faced second-tier Coventry City. United led 3-0 with 20 minutes left, thanks to goals by McTominay, Maguire, and Bruno Fernandes. Then Coventry staged one of the most improbable comebacks you'll ever see. Sims 3-1, O'Hare 3-2. And in stoppage time, Haji right from the penalty spot 3-3. We go to extra time. In the last minute of extra time, Haji Wright sets up Torp for the dramatic game winner, but VAR spots an offsides in the buildup. Goal chalked off. We go to penalties. Haji Wright converts his, but two of his teammates not as fortunate. United prevail. Not how we drew it up, but for the second straight year, we do end up with a Manchester City, Manchester United FA Cup final.
Yeah, nobody could have predicted how we ultimately got there, but we still get here with this delicious type of final. Let's get rid of the Man City Chelsea game. Obviously, Man City coming off of the disappointment of going out in Europe, and they came out there and they were professional. They were deep, which is what we talk about it, and they got the win against a Chelsea team that certainly we have been critical of in terms of what they are, but put up a good fight. And I guess at this point, when you're talking about Chelsea, that's something that you can hang your hat on if you're Chelsea. So congratulations to Man City. They appear in yet another final for the potential for silverware here. But the big talking point and the big game was Coventry and Manchester United. And the fact that so many saw this, even though it is a win, and by the way, a win to send them to yet another final and the opportunity, the unlikely opportunity in this given time of this mediocre Manchester United team to actually win. But I think a lot of fans, I think a lot of pundits out there, and I'll bet probably there's a lot of players out there that will look at it almost as if they lost. And yet, they have the opportunity to, at the end of the day, stand with a trophy, which is mind-boggling given what Ten Hag is and isn't and what this team is and isn't.
I think we've identified the one person in Casemiro whose big takeaway from that City Real Madrid shootout was, I really like that Bernardo Silva penalty because he tried to recreate it a few days later and looked equally stupid.
First off, I think the criticism, and correct me if I'm wrong, is certainly warranted for a team, even this mediocre version of Manchester United, to give up this lead and this what seemed insurmountable type of situation of being up 3-0. And yet, and look, sometimes the soccer gods do different things, and there were deflections, there were strange goals. That is certainly going to happen. But you would expect this type of team, or would you expect this type of team? You would expect Ten Hag, or would you expect Ten Hag to be able to do the things off the field that relate to what happens on the field, to put this one away, to see it out, whatever phrase that you want to use. And yet they didn't. Was this just one of those crazy days, or was this yet another point that we can look at and say, this is a mediocre team, this is a mediocre coach, and they're lucky as hell to even be in this position to play in a final?
Yeah, I think the latter.
Okay.
I think this reflects some serious problems, how you could blow a game like that. That would have been maybe the worst loss in Manchester United history. I don't think Ten Hag is going to be back regardless, but that would have been game over for him. Now, if they have a strong ending to the Premier League campaign and beat Manchester City in the FA Cup final, he would at least have a case to make.
You do think he still has a case. I don't think he, I mean, yeah, you're being very generous.
I'm being generous. I'm 99% sure he's not going to be back.
And we've talked about him over the years, and there's nothing interesting. There's nothing inspiring. There's nothing energetic about him. Now, on the other side, and even though it's ultimately in a losing effort, Haji Wright, this guy just cannot be stopped. He is a machine. He is in rarefied air. For the individual and certainly relative to American history when it comes to players and finals and what he did. And, you know, if not for the existence of VAR, he might have been man of the match and led his team to a final. So congratulations to him and congratulations to Coventry to even be able to come back and even make it to that point. But this is fun to see. I'm not sure he can put his finger on why this is all happening, nor should he even try. Just ride it, my friend. And it's fun to see, obviously, relative to the U.S. Men's National Team. And we've been not critical, but maybe more dismissive of Haji Wright relative to the nine position or to any type of position up there. But He just keeps forcing the issue.
He is going to be a tough player to keep off that Copa America roster because of his versatility. He can play down the middle and he can play down the wings.
We're going to talk a lot here about VAR and what VAR is.
Well, we should go there because I mentioned there was an offside in the buildup. It was Haji Wright who was slightly offsides. VAR's popularity did not was not enhanced by chalking off that goal, but you thought it was the right decision.
Yeah, I thought it was the right decision. There was a lot of hand-wringing going on about VAR. A lot of it emanating from our friends over there in England, which, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about the, what's it, the Schadenfreude and all that kind of stuff going forward. By the way, I will say this puts Haji Wright in some really interesting company here. Fourth American to score at Wembley in a club match. Mike Masters back in 1992. Quick story about Mike Masters. He was one of these players and a long list of players that were just rotated into our residential program in Mission Viejo, California, as we trained for the 94 World Cup. And here's an example of a player who was very good at being that post-up type of Zlatan-ish type of player up top. Now, he's not Zlatan, but that in that mold, that just didn't fit in. I remember when he came into the national team and, you know, he was doing things overseas, which made him unique relative to a lot of American players, but came in and it just didn't fit. And sometimes that's just the case. Doesn't mean you're a bad player. It just means in that moment, for that group, it just doesn't work. Anyway, Haji Wright joins Mike Masters back in 1992, John Harkes and Christian Pulisic scoring in these finals. So congratulations to Haji Wright. All right, should we go on and wrap in the VAR?
Before we depart the FA Cup, they are having a similar debate in England right now to the one we've been having in this country regarding the U.S. Open Cup. I don't know if you saw this big news late last week. The Football Association announced that they are scrapping replays in every round because of fixture congestion. A lot of people think this is elitist because it's only the top clubs that play in Europe who are worried about fixture congestion. The lower league teams like replays. It benefits them financially. We covered the FA Cup for many years, and whenever a lower division team would face a Liverpool or a Manchester United, our boss, John T. Whitehead, would always explain to us that they would almost rather a draw than a win because they wanted the replay. And also a lot of purists are upset because the FA Cup is a competition steeped in tradition. Replays are a big part of that. Some of the most famous matches in FA Cup history have been replays. So there's a raging debate in England right now about that.
Well, wait. The argument is that it's not that they don't get the replay and the romance of the actual replay game. It's that they don't get the gate. And so after all the talk about, you know, players and safety and, you know, the too many games and all that kind of stuff, what it really comes down to is you're not going to make money. And I know money is important, but that's my point, is that this all has to do with money. So couldn't it be solved by just saying that the lower division or the lower ranked team always hosts and it's just one game?
Yeah, that's what they do in Germany, which I think is correct.
Yeah, but you're going to ask these Premier League teams who are certainly all about money. And that's not a judgmental thing. I like it when people are honest and open that this is why this is happening. And it is about money. And if you don't want to make as much money and you don't want to pay the players as much money, then fine. And it's easy to say, let's play less games. I'm of the opinion that I want to play as many games as possible as a player. And as a fan, obviously, we want to see as many games as possible. All right. What else, Musk?
All right. So in terms of the Premier League title race, City obviously did not play in the Premier League this past weekend because they were involved in the FA Cup semis. Arsenal and Liverpool both handled their business. Arsenal won 2-0 away to Wolves. Trossard and Odegaard with the goals. Liverpool won 3-1 away to Fulham. Trent Alexander-Arnold, Gravenberch, and Jota with their goals. So the weekend ends Arsenal and Liverpool at 74, City at 73, but City with one fewer game.
Yeah, so has all of our thinking changed as to what happened last week and with the game in hand that you would expect if Chelsea had a game in hand, or sorry, not Chelsea, if Liverpool had a game in hand or Arsenal had a game in hand, and now we have Manchester City have a game in hand of those three, I think most people, if they are honest, would expect Man City to win their game in hand.
Yeah, there's a midweek round coming up. Arsenal face Chelsea, Liverpool away to Everton, City away to Brighton. Three big matches there.
Yeah, so that's okay. So that's Thursday. That will be the game that will
City's game is Thursday. I think Arsenal is tomorrow. Actually, quick turnaround for them.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. All sorts of stuff. All right. Well, listen. The way that I was listening to the reaction to this weekend was, it's almost as if, oh, it's on again. can't be on again if the team actually, that was actually in the top of the table didn't actually play. So it's amazing. But it's fun to think that it is on again. And who knows? Maybe it will be. We're just waiting for one of these teams to slip up. And when it happened last week, everyone said, oh, this is it. This is the window finally opening. But evidently, there's multiple windows. Some of them are open. Some of them are closed. And even the ones that are closed, people don't care.
Also in the Premier League this past weekend, Nottingham Forest suffered a 2-0 defeat away to Everton. Gio started, was subbed out early in the second half. Forest, very unhappy with the officiating in this one. They put out a statement alleging that the referee was biased because he's a Luton Town fan, and Luton is the other team battling Forest for relegation. Gio was involved in one of the decisions that they were unhappy with. Our colleague Mark Clattenburg, who works for Forest now as a refereeing consultant, he's involved in this controversy. It's quite the story.
This is the dumbest thing ever. the pearl clutching that is going on, and you know the pundits out there. What's his name? Neville.
Gary Neville.
Gary Neville. No. And Jamie Carragher and others out there, and I like listen to him. But I mean, I think Gary Neville called for Mark Clattenburg to step down. No, the whole point of why Clattenburg is this new job with Forest is to advocate for Forest. It's not to protect the referees. It's not to protect his former colleagues out there. It's to do what he feels is appropriate. And whether it's squeaky wheeling something like this, or whether it's using the owner to send that message and make sure that everybody knows this is the situation going on. Now, the statement that Nottingham Forest came out with was a little rich and was real. I thought it was just funny. I didn't think it was the most ridiculous thing ever. Although to threaten that you are going to find something to do, there's nothing else to do. You all agreed to play by these rules. And these are human beings with all of their baggage and all of their bias. And in this case, all of their team affiliations as supporters and as fans. But either we're going to entrust humans to make these decisions or we're not. And again, Mossy, the reason why VAR came into existence, or the reason why I was told VAR was coming into this existence, was so we could get the calls right. And guess what? Sometimes it takes a long time to get the right call. And sometimes it doesn't. And guess what? Sometimes when the right call is made, you might not actually agree with the fact that it's the right call. In this case, they felt they were aggrieved by the person that was making those calls because of his affiliation with Luton or in terms of being a supporter, and the sheer number of them that they pointed to, which was three. I have very little sympathy for Nottingham Forest, but I also think it's ridiculous, some of the reactions here. Nottingham Forest lost the game, and they didn't get the calls that they think they should get. So they're going to complain, and they're going to whine. They're not going to have any recourse. And Mark Clattenburg, in his position and in his capacity, is going to do everything to earn the money that he is being paid in that position to set up Nottingham Forest in the best possible light given this situation.
For the record, Sean Sullivan did not agree with Gio getting subbed out when he was. He thought he was playing well.
Well, I mean, there, one of the moments where he was possibly taken down. And of the three, you know, you could certainly make cases in all of them because they are all subjective types of decisions. It was a little weird to see Gio get taken out. But, you know, now we're a couple games in where he's getting starts. So that's a good thing. If nothing else, just to keep him fit, just to keep him playing. Let's be honest. When it comes to Nottingham Forest, yes, I want him to score. And yes, I want him to play well. But the score of the Nottingham Forest game, and even if they go up or down, doesn't mean as much to me as him staying healthy and as him playing on a consistent basis, because he's not going to be there going forward. And whatever happens to Nottingham Forest happens to Nottingham Forest. I don't care about Nottingham Forest. I care about Gio Reyna.
So an eventful weekend in England. Let's go to Spain, where Real Madrid put La Liga to bed by claiming a 3-2 home win over Barcelona in a back-and-forth affair. Christensen scored first, then Vinicius equalized from the penalty spot. Second half, Fermín López put Barca back ahead 2-1. Then Lucas Vázquez 2-2. And in stoppage time, Jude Bellingham with the winner. Real Madrid opening up an 11-point lead in La Liga. Plenty of refereeing controversy in this one as well, which we'll get to in a second. But overall thoughts first on Real Madrid winning this one.
Well, I don't think it should be a surprise, given the fact that this year Real Madrid is a better team. I don't think it should be a surprise, that Jude factored in because he is arguably their MVP for the year. Debatable. And this was still a fun game to watch, and this was still good goals.
In their first La Liga game this season, Real Madrid won 2-1. Jude Bellingham scored both goals, including a stoppage time winner in that one. So he did it in both Clásicos. One positive from a Barcelona perspective, I remember Messi's first couple of Clásicos when he hadn't put it all together yet, but you could see that there was a tornado coming. Right. Lamine Yamal gives off some similar vibes. What a player.
Did you just compare Lamine Yamal to Leo Messi?
Yes, that sound you heard was Fran Arthur throwing things back there.
Wow.
World's biggest Messi fan.
My goodness. All right, should we get to the controversy here?
Yes, so a couple plays. First off, I mentioned that Real Madrid scored off a penalty. That was a hotly debated decision. Lucas Vazquez going down after a challenge by Pau Cubarsí. And then later in the first half, Barcelona had a corner. Rafinha took it. Lamine Yamal flicked it towards goal. Lunin stopped it. It was unclear whether it crossed the line or not. Replays were inconclusive, and La Liga does not have goal line technology, so the goal was not awarded. Barcelona are furious. Laporta, their president, said today, if they can find some video that shows that it was a goal, they're going to ask for the match to be replayed.
So they're going to ask fans who had their phones out for every single possible angle?
Was there an Abraham Zapruder in the stand somewhere?
But this also points out what happens, or if... Like everyone says, well, we need to go back to a world without VAR, and VAR is ruining it. No, this is exactly what would happen then. Because we all have cameras. There are all cameras all over the place. And it would just be a bigger show than it already is. So, but La Liga not having goal line technology, that's interesting. Because I know MLS, when that happens, everybody screams and yells, oh, MLS, a bunch of cheap bastards, and they don't have it, and blah, blah, blah. And the argument is that the cost associated with it, the squeeze isn't worth the juice because so few times you actually have it making a decision.
What about the penalty? It reminded me of the Saka Neuer play at the end of the Arsenal-Bayern first leg. Again, we're debating. The defender does lunge. There's not a lot of contact, and we're debating whether the attacking player had to go to the ground to avoid getting hit or if it was just a dive.
I don't think a player is required to avoid a hit. I don't think a player is required to, by either jumping or being faster. And as a matter of fact, I think smart players recognize that they have, and I'm going to use this word, earned the foul or the penalty associated with the foul because of their actions. And smart players see it coming and they take that hit, and that's not cheating. That's not embellishment. I think that's just smart. And again, these are all subjective types of things that in that moment people have to decide. And again, when a VAR is a situation comes up, I know so many people scream, yeah, but it takes so long and it takes us out of the game and all that kind of stuff. If you're on trial, okay, for murder, you don't want the jury to have a time limit. You can only get 5 minutes to deliberate this and then come back. No, you want them to take as much time as it possibly takes to get as close to the right and truth that you can get. And that's the way I look at VAR when people scream and yell about, you know, time and it's changing the game. Yeah, sometimes it takes time to get to the right answer. And even that right answer, as I said before, you might not agree with it ultimately.
At the same time that this was going on, Boca Juniors claimed a 3-2 win over River Plate in Córdoba in the quarterfinals of the Argentinian League Cup. Edinson Cavani with the winner there. But you found the venue for this match not really befitting of such a great rivalry.
Yeah. I mean, for this rivalry, we've talked on the State of the Union before about the rivalry and how awesome it is. But I think it highlights from a stadium construction era how far we've moved from the old days. And for those that didn't watch, it was in a stadium that had a track type of thing around it. And it just completely takes the air out of the balloon. It deadens the atmosphere. It, I think, really hurts the aesthetic watching the game. And it's why when people build soccer-specific stadiums, rarely if ever, I think, if you're building a new one, do you include the athletic field? And I know athletics have changed over the years and it was meant to be multi-use, but I hate watching games played in stadiums where there is a track. It just completely takes me out of the game. And I think it ultimately hurts the product, as it did here. The actual on-the-field stuff was interesting. It was a lot more sloppy than I expected. But it was fun to see, you know, the likes of Cavani still doing what he's doing.
You know, it was just absolute bedlam our control room. It genuinely distracted me.
Yep.
And I thought, oh my God, did somebody get hurt? Did something serious happen? And Sean Sullivan just got a mayor to inform me that it's Bologna scoring a bicycle kick goal against Roma. So that's what elicited that yell from
He's very excited. He's got his Italian trip coming up here. So, yep.
To get back to what we're talking about, the fact that Real Madrid and Barcelona and Boca and River were scoring off at the same time is interesting because a few months ago on this pod, we asked you to identify the five biggest club rivalries in world football. And I believe those were your top two, correct?
I think so, yeah. Because, the Boca River one was because of the emotion and because of the passion and the fire and the cauldron that seems to percolate. And this one was, yeah. Void.
I believe Milan-Inter was also on that list.
Yep.
We're taping this on Monday morning. Later today, Milan face Inter. If Inter win that game, they clinch the Serie A title. We'll be able to talk about that one on our next pod on Wednesday.
All right. Well, I'll look forward.
On the topic of rivalries, by the way, The Athletic is doing a really good series right now on the biggest rivalries in world football. The latest installment, Felipe Cardenas traveled to Mexico. He attended a Monterrey Tigres game that finished 3-3, and he wrote a piece about the history of that rivalry. It was really good. I highly recommend it.
It's fun to see those. And look, we have them here when it comes to our American sports. We have them here when it comes to our American soccer. And sometimes it's built up over years. Sometimes it's built up over decades. Sometimes I guess it's built up over, I guess, a century. And it's often reflective of the culture and the history and the good and bad that has happened, mostly off the field, and what the fan groups represent, the politics of it, all that kind of stuff that just gets melded into this incredible cauldron.
A couple of weeks ago, there was a Celtic Rangers game that was 3-3 that was being hailed as the best Old Firm derby in ages. So, yeah, when a great rivalry like that lives up to the billing, it's very exciting.
Sometimes it doesn't, but when it does, it's cool. All right, anything else?
That's it.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take a trip around the U.S. because we got some MLS action that was going on. Okay, welcome back. There was some interesting MLS action, some craziness, goal fests, and some real surprises in terms of results. Mossy, where do you want to start?
We'll begin with Inter Miami. They claimed a 3-1 home win over Nashville. They are all alone atop the East. Lionel Messi with 2 goals and 1 assist, continuing his incredible start to the season. He's got 7 goals and 6 assists in 6 MLS games.
He is incredible. And this was such an interesting game because, the goals that we have now started to associate him with MLS, we've been doing it for years with Barcelona and the like, and Argentina. We're associating with these magical moments. And yet both of these goals were nothing. If it wasn't Messi, we'd be like, okay, whatever. He scored a penalty and then a broken play that he did finish off. But the greatness is in that Messi is doing this and he's doing it consistently. And, for this team in pink, it just each and every time they go out, they're must-see TV. And more often than not, they are delivering. And individually, when it comes to Messi right now, he is on a torrid pace. And if he were to keep this up, we would see a historic production, I guess, goals, assists to game ratio out there. And yes, he has had some injuries going forward here. But man, oh man. I surprise myself, and I'm sure I surprise others, in the surprise I have for Messi. We should not be surprised anymore.
Speaking of injuries, they continue to pile up for Inter Miami. Diego Gomez, the latest one, sounds like he could be out a few weeks, so that's some bad news for them.
I know it's in the assessment of coaches and managers out there, oftentimes coaches that have a lot at their disposal and more, we don't always give them the benefit of the doubt, but what Tata Martino is doing, given some of the things that you're talking about here with these injuries and still producing, I know there will be plenty of calls and still early days as to coach of the year, but it'll be hard for someone to vote for Tata Martino given the wealth that he has there, but he's still doing a pretty phenomenal job. Again, like Messi, producing, even when at times it's difficult And I know it's all relative because there's other coaches out there who say, yeah, let me deal with that difficult challenge that Tata Martino has.
LAFC and the Red Bulls played to a 2-2 draw. The Red Bulls led twice. Dennis Buanga equalized twice, including in second half stoppage time.
Yeah, he's feeling it. And again, we've talked about this LAFC team kind of just biding time until the summer when there could be some changes and new players come in and maybe some changes of players going out. But with Danny Buanga scoring goals and taking it upon himself here right at the death to save a point against a New York Red Bulls team that absolutely is for real right now, so much so that they will be kicking themselves for not holding on here and finishing this one out. But it was a wild affair back and forth, as were plenty of these games.
Including the next one, the LA Galaxy claimed a 4-3 home win over San Jose. Peck, Paintso, Yoshida, and Puj with the Galaxy goals. They led 3-0 and 4-1. Let it get a little too close for comfort at the end, but they hold on for the 3 points. They're all alone atop the West.
Yeah, red card to Zavaleta at a certain point, but it's a strange LA Galaxy team. It's a good team. I'm here for it, and it's certainly better than what we have seen in the past, but they are still incredibly susceptible. They have no real idea how to shut down a game. We've talked a lot up in this pod already about teams that don't have that idea. They're bad in the air and they're bad on set pieces. And that San Jose were able to even fight back and be in this, it's not a good look for LA, the LA Galaxy. For the neutral, this was a great game and this is a storied type of matchup. And it was a fun game ultimately to watch. Ricky Puig, again, they gave him space and time. They weren't all great goals, but they will take them. San Jose is not even close to the level of the LA Galaxy, and that they were even in this game is amazing to me. But ultimately, they still, when all is said and done, they still lose.
Yeah, the Galaxy have to improve defensively. They're going to be serious contenders.
Yeah, they do. Can I just hit on a couple before we
absolutely
before we go? Just interesting tidbits. You know, we don't go through all the different games here, but I will say that when I was looking and watching all these games, what Salt Lake is right now, and for them to go into, yes, it's not a good Chicago team, but to smack Chicago, I thought that was good. Biggest surprise for me of the weekend from an MLS perspective was Austin. This is not a good Austin team. This is a team where Josh Wolf is on the hot seat and should be on the hot seat. They go into Houston, and Houston getting Hector Herrera back, they think, all right, now all guns blazing, even though he started on the bench. They go into Houston and get a win. I don't know who predicted that, but if anybody did, congratulations on doing that. And Colorado, when they started out the year, we said, uh-oh, this could be a problem for Chris Armas and friends. They have course-corrected, and they get another win, albeit against Dallas. And then the final one, Seattle. I mean, Seattle, we've said this before, where it's a problem, and they get their shit together. But man, oh man, this is not a good look for Seattle to have Vancouver, their friends from the north, come down. And yes, with a red card, but Brian Schmetzer and company, they better get their act together right now or it could go really, really bad.
One bonus one from me, Minnesota with a 3-0 away win over Charlotte. Lode and yes. Dotson among the scorers there. The quotes emanating from Minnesota regarding Emmanuel Reynoso are pretty remarkable. You've got players saying, we're done with him. He doesn't care about us. We're moving on. So yeah, it sounds like his time is probably done there.
I've said before that players will forgive and forget anything in order to win. But you can see that as Minnesota has gotten points, and it's almost like a Dumbo, hey, you can fly. You don't need the feather. You can fly. Well, I think the players from Minnesota have said, this guy's letting us down and we don't need him. We are just as good. And who knows when he's going to be there. So I like the fact that they're kind of coming together, the loons up there in that way. Peter Vermes, by the way, the 3-3 game against St. Louis. I know somebody was on X here asking me about what they thought was a tepid reaction from Peter Vermes and almost forgiving the fact that they let St. Louis back into the game. And by the way, it was a foul on Klaus. I don't care what anybody says. You can go back and watch it and you'll figure it out. But those are just some things to keep in mind. I think Peter Vermes was protecting his players, but this was absolutely 2 points lost and a bad 2 points lost from Sporting KC in that, I guess it's an interstate rival between Kansas City and St. Louis.
Also this week, the CONCACAF Champions Cup semis get underway. On Tuesday, America will face Pachuca at the Azteca. Then Wednesday, Columbus, who are now carrying the flag for MLS, will host Monterrey. Both matches live on FS1.
Yeah, the Columbus tied 2-2 with Portland, and I get the feeling that they are keeping powder dry. And it's difficult for any teams. And we've talked about the best teams in the world with these incredible players and all this depth and all this money struggling when they're playing and on multiple fronts here. And Columbus is doing it here with, as we've said before, the foot behind the back that MLS imposes. And they are the only hope when it comes to MLS. But I'm excited to watch it. And I still believe in Columbus.
They're carrying the flag for MLS, but in terms of American soccer as a whole, you also have two prominent players in Zendejas and Brandon Vasquez playing for Mexican sides.
Yeah, you know, we're the architect, like we said, the architect at times of our own destruction. So while an individual, I mean, the ideal thing is to have those players play and to play well, but in a losing effort to the actual MLS team.
That is it.
All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's time for Ask Alexi. Okay, welcome back. It's time for Ask Alexi, that part of the show where you send in your comments, questions, and concerns. And keep in mind that our handle out there on the social media platforms is SOTU with Alexi. Or you can call our State of the Union podcast hotline, which is 657-549-2297, 657-549-2297. What do the folks want to know this show?
First up, we have a voicemail. Let's take a listen right now.
What's up, guys? It's Don Armando from West Palm, Florida. On the theme of making CONCACAF stronger and more competitive, what are your thoughts on a unified single island association or team? I mean, out of 41 associations, arguably there are 6 to 8 teams that are strong. Jamaica, Haiti, TNT probably shouldn't be united given their strengths. I don't know. What do you think? Why or why not is this possible? P.S. Alexi. I was in the Rose Bowl in 94 behind the goal that suffered the own goal and Tony's miraculous two-handed extension grab. We finally met you a couple weeks ago in Dallas for the Jamaica game and told you we got married a few days before. Would love to share a beer with you. More than willing to travel. Cheers.
Ah, that's awesome. Well, thank you, Don. Thank you for being around all these years and watching and supporting and doing all that kind of stuff. Well, first off, let me get to your idea here. It's interesting. I see some problems with it. We're going to talk a little bit more about nationalism, if you will, or the pride that comes from representing your country and the support that you have for your country. When we talk about the 41 members in CONCACAF, they are all distinct. And while there is an incredible disparity when it comes to the quality and the talent available and just the sheer size available, they are all distinct and sovereign countries. And the men and women that come from these countries, I would think, have an incredible pride in the same way that we as Americans do. And in a certain sense, giving that up and having a unified multi-country type of national team, I just don't see how that works. And while I've never played on that minnow type of team, and I wouldn't want to speak for them, but in my brain, I would say, you know what? I don't want to represent some other country. And while you from afar as America or as the world or Don over there in Florida, you may look at us as a small country that never has the opportunity or the chance to rise to the level of your Americas and your Canadas and your Mexicos. It doesn't matter. We would rather lose being united as one country than give up that autonomy. And so, yeah, I think I get what you're saying. And from a pure competitive standpoint, it would be interesting. And tactically, it would be interesting is what the alliances would be. And what countries you would look to, and would it be because of proximity? Would it be because of shared interests or history? Would it be simply because, hey, this team has more talent and therefore ultimately would be good? But if and when you had success, if and when you won, it wouldn't reflect back on you as an individual country. And therefore, I think you would lose something in that moment. So, Yeah, I don't see that happening, but I understand why you're suggesting it. As far as you know, your history, it was great to meet you. Hopefully, we can get that beer at some point going forward. Hopefully, and certainly in a couple of years, the opportunity to do it again and to watch your U.S. team play in a Men's World Cup in the United States exists. And we've come a long way, Don. And it's because of people like you that have year in and year out supported the game that we have come so far. So keep doing it. And I hope you're still married. You know, I mean, that was an important part of the message there. But fun to hear from somebody like that. I remember the games in the Rose Bowl like they were yesterday. And it's amazing that it's going to be 30 years this summer.
You know, I've said this before, but it's worth repeating. For all the hate you get on social media, I've traveled with you a lot to cover games. And when fans come up to you at hotel lobbies and bars and such, it's nothing but love. And you're very good in those situations. So, you know, it's always lovely to see.
Well, there is a distortion that happens on social media. And while I look at it as almost a video game in the way that I play it, and oftentimes if it bleeds, it leads, I recognize and accept that I can give a distorted view of what people are. Now, don't get me wrong. Plenty of people are completely sincere in their dislike and distaste when it comes to things that I do and say. But, you know, comes with the territory. But to your point, whether it's Don or others out there, the vast, vast majority are wonderfully positive and we have good interactions, even if at times we disagree on things either on or off the soccer field going forward. And it's fun. It's fun to get out there and to meet all of these incredible soccer people. Sometimes we can get bogged down and inside with what we are doing. So I love getting out there on the road and hanging out with people.
And we'll have more on that in your one for the road today.
Yes.
Next up, this requires a bit of a setup. When we taped our last pod on Wednesday, Arsenal and Manchester City had just been knocked out of the Champions League. We noted the fact that there were no English teams left in that competition. The following day, Liverpool and West Ham crashed out of the Europa League. Aston Villa did advance to the semifinals of the Conference League. They are the only English team left in Europe. You posted all the teams that are left in the three competitions with their country flags. And then you put at the top, England, .. Ouch. You were far from alone. I saw everybody from MLS Matt Doyle types to Matteo Bonetti, who covers Serie A, to Bundesliga journalists reveling over England's failures in Europe this season. That prompted a couple of posts from Craig Burley, who said, some can't wait to pile on when Premier League clubs have a bad European season. Predictable every time. Is it the Premier League's fault it's marketed itself far better than other leagues globally for over 20 years? Hence, it's the go-to package for broadcasters if you want to really move the needle. Then Craig also said, fans, pundits of other European leagues basking in Premier League sides being eliminated. What a pathetic, weird bunch. If only they'd had three Champions League winners in the last 5 years. So I did want to explore this concept of schadenfreude with England. I mean, where does it come from with you?
Where does it come from? From me?
Yes.
It comes from the arrogant, snobby, elitist type of attitudes. Relative to American soccer, obviously, which is what I'm part of. And this is without a doubt something that I wear on my sleeve. And I, as a generation that has grown up and now multiple decades have gone through it, have seen it, have fought against it. And I recognize that it is part of who I am. And hopefully there are other generations where it's less and less and less going forward. But, you know, to Craig's point, just, you know, take the L. Okay, you're still, when I say you, I mean the EPL, you're still the most popular soccer league in history. In the history of the planet, the most popular soccer league is the EPL, all right? We can argue if it's the best or not, but it's the most popular out there in terms of the sheer numbers, in terms of the money, to your point, Craig Burley, in terms of the marketing, when it comes to what they have done, and they get plenty of kudos, and they will continue to get kudos and praise going forward for the type of competition and the entertainment that they give on the field, for the way that it is packaged, and for its proliferation all around the world. Congratulations. But it's human nature, especially when at times you look down your nose on others. If and when you get that moment, you're going to gloat and you're going to have your moment. When the United States goes and loses to Trinidad and Tobago, you're going to have your moment. whether it's Trinidad and Tobago or others, that in that moment, hey, we got one over on the big guys. Hey, you who were screaming and yelling about how great you are. Hey, we see it in politics. We see it in countries and cultures. American exceptionalism. When that happens, this is a natural human type of reaction. And it's okay. I'm going to keep watching the EPL. I still enjoy watching the EPL. But just pointing out the fact that in this moment, in this year, the EPL was not good relative to Europe. And there's a million different reasons out there. But ultimately, when it comes to winning and being there in the end, congratulations to Aston Villa for being at the, not even the NIT. What's below the NIT, right?
Yes. I agree with you. Listen, I still think the Premier League is the best league in the world. I don't believe you should draw sweeping conclusions off one season because the margins are so small. There's a reason why UEFA, their league rankings are based on five-year results and the Premier League is still on top of that. But the thing I've always said is, their level of arrogance is disproportionate to what the gap actually is. They act like the Premier League is the NBA and everything else is the G League and nothing that happens anywhere else matters. And when I say they, I'm not just talking about fans. Pundits are like that as well. A few weeks ago, Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville were debating the best players in the world at each position. And when they were talking about wingers, Gary Neville brought up Vinicius Jr. and Jamie Carragher dismissed him because he plays in a crap league. The guy plays for Real Madrid in Brazil, but he can't be one of the best players in the world at his position because he doesn't do it in the Premier League. So that type of stuff annoys people, Craig. And so when you get a chance to throw it back in their face, they're going to. So I don't mind it. I think it's completely natural.
I don't mind it at all. And look, I know Craig, and I really enjoy listening to him. And I think he's really good at what he does. And I think that there is a little bit of poke back here in what he's doing, you know, because people are going to do this, and it happens in all walks of life. It happens in all types of situations, as I mentioned, when it comes to politics and all that kind of stuff. It's natural, and I got no problem with it. Don't worry, Craig. The EPL is going to be just fine.
A guy I wouldn't mind having on the pod.
Yeah, absolutely. I worked with him years and years ago, and I think he's done a really good job, has come over and established a voice and an interesting voice over there at ESPN.
That's it?
That's it? Oh my goodness. All right. Well, anyway, I know you had, when I put that tweet up, that X post up, you had flagged it and said, this phenomenon, let's talk a little bit about that. And I don't think we're necessarily breaking ground or telling people that something that they don't know, but recognizing what is happening here and why it is, I think, a natural type of human reaction is okay. All right, listen, we come to the end of our show, and at the end of each and every show, I give you my one for the road. There's a couple things that we want to talk about here, but we're going to save the music here to the very end. But my one for the road is I was on the road this weekend, and I headed out to Arizona over there in Phoenix and the Scottsdale area for a little trip and vacation. Wonderful part of the world, obviously. It was desert hot. It was like 95 degrees, which was interesting, even coming from Los Angeles. And we had a wonderful time out there. At one point, we went into a restaurant, and I was sitting there with the group that I was in Arizona with, and somebody came up to me and tapped me on the shoulder. Hey, nice to meet you. And come to find out that they were sitting at a table on the other side of the restaurant with a group from Phoenix Rising and a youth team from Phoenix Rising that are part of MLS Next. And so I came over and I met these wonderful kids, and they were all dressed up. For those that are watching, you can see the picture here in the restaurant. It was interesting because before the guy came over to our table, I was just hanging with my friends, and we were talking about, and anybody that has listened to the pod for any length of time knows, the way I feel about wings. Just a conveyance for the actual sauce and a ridiculous food and so much work and all you'd get is messy and there's very little meat, all that kind of stuff. And I just given my little spiel about that. And I went over to the table with these young players here, and you can't see it. It's very small, but there's one player that's pointing to me and he is holding on to his wing because this was a place that had plenty of wings. And he was going to die on that hill when it came to wings, not even knowing the way that I felt about wings. But it was wonderful to see maybe to see the future of America when it comes to the soccer players out there. They start them young. And this area, like many other areas out there, is blowing up when it comes to soccer and what they are doing. He went back and finished his plate of wings. There was a Phoenix Rising game later on in the day. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go. So next time I'm back there, I will check that out. But I had a wonderful, wonderful time. And again, you go out there and all across this wonderful country of America, you see glimpses and you hear and see wonderful stories relative to the game of soccer. And as I said so many times when it comes to what we are as an American soccer nation, don't let anybody tell you that America isn't a soccer nation. It is. It's robust. It is passionate. It has a history. It is unique. And it is different. And that is nothing to apologize for. It has incredible defenders of what it is, both on and off the field. And I am incredibly bullish about the future when I see young players, when I see the way that soccer has made its way into mainstream situations, when I see how soccer, even soccer from around the world, to Craig Burley's point that we just talked about, and the way that soccer has become part of the culture, the way that soccer has become part of the conversation, even with all of our infighting, it's a wonderful thing to get out there. And when you meet people and when you see these types of situations where soccer is a part of their life, it just warms the cockles of my redheaded American heart, my friend.
Yeah, we did a segment once on this pod in which we tried to convert you. We picked up wings and had you eat them on the air.
Yeah.
That was during the Luis Aguilar era when we used to have fun on this pod. Sean right. Sullivan, more of a straight arrow.
Right. He got rid of that immediately.
Yes.
None of those shenanigans going on here.
Nope.
Should we pay off our little talk that we had last week?
Yeah, so on our last pod, I mentioned that I went to see a Kurt Cobain documentary. We talked briefly about grunge. And sure enough, on Friday, Pearl Jam released a new album called Dark Matter. Sean Sullivan fired up about that. He's a big Pearl Jam fan. Also on Friday, Taylor Swift released a new album. I think it's called Tortured Poets Department. Also on Friday, it was the 30-year anniversary of the release of the greatest hip-hop album of all time, Nas's Illmatic. He celebrated the occasion by putting out a new song called Define My Name, produced by DJ Premier, and they intimated that they're working on an album together. Speaking of hip-hop, on our last pod, I asked you if you had a preference between Tupac and Biggie. You said you couldn't name a single song from either. We laughed about it. We moved on. I thought that would be that. But a day or two later, I got a text from you saying you've been doing your research and you now have an opinion. So, folks, Alexi Lalas is about to settle the defining hip-hop debate of our time. The floor is yours.
All right. So, and I wanted to be fair to both of these artists. And so what I did was I went on their Spotify page. And the top five songs, you know, as decided by the public out there, those are the ones that I listen to. So obviously, this is not a deep dive. I'm sure that as soon as I say these five songs, people are going to say, yeah, but why didn't you have this one? Doesn't matter, right? These were the five that people listen to the most in terms of what is downloaded and what is streamed out there. And so this is what we are going with. As you mentioned, while I know who these two artists are, I can't name a single song. And raise my hand, it is not the genre of music that I know, and it's certainly not the genre of music that I seek out or like. I have a hard time with it. And I'm going to try not to grumpy old man this too much, but it's just the reality of the hip-hop rap genre that just never appealed to me. All right, so when it comes to Tupac, these are the five songs. California Love, Hit 'Em Up, All Eyes on Me, Ambitions with a Z, As with a Z, Rida, and Changes. Those are the five. When it comes to Biggie, it's Hypnotize, Big Papa, Juicy, Mo Money, Mo Problems, Party and Bullshit. Okay? So those are the five. You
I'll just say, for Biggie, Party and Bullshit. Great song. It's off the Who's the Man soundtrack. The other are all commercial singles that nobody regards as his best songs, but they were big. You know, it's like Jump with Van Halen. You know, it's not like...
Well, because it's popular, it's not a good song?
Correct.
All right. This is a whole nother show. This is a whole nother feat. You know, I can't even get into it. You're making me angry before we even start here.
And in Tupac's case, Hit 'Em Up is considered the most vicious diss song in hip-hop history.
I did read that.
You know, the backstory is Tupac was shot in a New York studio in November of 1994, and he believed that Biggie and Puffy set him up, And that's what triggered the whole feud between the two of them. And then Tupac claimed to have had sex with Faith Evans, Biggie's wife. And so that the content of that song is pretty vicious.
What happened to this Tupac, you know, kid that went to a you know, a school where he was doing Shakespeare and an art school and all that kind of stuff? He really kind of changed over the years, huh?
Well, he's got some socially conscious songs. Brenda's Got a Baby, Keep Your Head Up. So perhaps you should have listened to some of those. So you're only getting one side of his personality.
All right, so,
but go ahead.
All right, so listen, not to belabor this. If you ask me right now who I would rather listen to, I think it's Tupac for a couple of different reasons that I will give you. Number one, production. Okay? The way something sounds is obviously important. And I know certain artists and certain genres go for a certain type of sound. When I compare the two, Tupac and Biggie, and look, I'm sure that as they went along, they had albums that were produced by incredible hit makers and wonderful knob turners and all that kind of stuff, and probably very, very expensive. But I think more often than not, when I was listening to Tupac versus Biggie, the production of it sounded better for Tupac. For whatever reason, you know, where they're recording, obviously the producers that they had and the people that they used. So he gets the thumbs up on that. When it comes to both of them, and probably all of this genre, the whole sampling thing, I get it. In that I understand that there is an argument to be made that this is a new art form in taking somebody else's art and reinterpreting it. The problem that I have, and this applies to both Biggie and Tupac here, is that, you know, for example, when I hear Bruce Hornsby on Changes, or I hear Diana Ross on More Money, More Problems, or something like that, I'm into it immediately. Why? Because those are good songs. Because those are actual songs that people wrote that have melody. And you are co-opting them so that I can actually register and recognize it. It's different because everybody cops from others, all right? And whether it's Bruce Hornsby or Diana Ross or anybody else, everybody is a reaction to what has happened before. But not taking the exact thing. If you like a bass line that you heard from Nile Rodgers or something like that, then go write one in the similar vein. But don't take the actual one. So that... And I know I'm screaming at the clouds and all that kind of stuff, but so that bothers me. And that, I think, applies to both of them. And then finally, and this also applies to both of them, and again, I'm 53 years old, but the poetry aspect of both of these artists, oftentimes are referred as poets. The language is ridiculous, okay? There are poets that have had as many problems, if not more problems, in the past that found a way creatively through actual poetry in terms of the words that they use to say something in a way that has never been, that it's never been said before, to at times disguise what they are saying in a wonderfully intelligent way. And yet there's none of that. The blatantness and the rawness, which I know appeals to a lot of people, I find a dumbing down when it comes to the artistry out there. Now, the beats and the dancing and all that kind of stuff, I get it. I like it. Then finally, I will say this. In terms of the actual performance of these two, I never saw them live, so I'm only listening to them here. There is a crispness and a clarity, yes, an anger, that I prefer when it comes to Tupac over Biggie. And I know it's an aesthetic. Like, Biggie is kind of more laid back, and there's almost a slurring that happens when he is spitting. Is that what they say? Spitting?
Yep.
When he is spitting. And for Tupac, when he's spitting, there's a real direct, almost harshness in the way that he is doing it. And for my sensibilities, I prefer that Tupac as opposed to the Biggie way of rapping.
There you go, folks. Debate has been settled.
Well, I don't know if it's been settled. I'm sure that this will get much more of a response than anything we've ever said about soccer.
Now, Nas, my favorite rapper, is better than both of them.
Really?
So if you want another homework assignment, go listen to the album I just alluded to, Illmatic, which came out in 1994. It's was inducted into the Library of Congress. I think it's the only hip-hop album ever to have that honor. It's a masterpiece.
Can I just say something finally here? The nominees, Hall of Fame inductees were announced this year for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
It's so stupid again. It's just call it the Music Hall of Fame so we don't have to argue about this all the time on what is rock and roll, what isn't rock and roll. All right. Anything else?
Not a lot of music to
Yeah, I know. It's good. Well, you know, if people listen this far, then they get a little bit...
And very quickly, Pearl Jam, you have an opinion on them?
Yeah, it doesn't do anything for me. I mean, that first album was good because it was melodic. Although I did like the last album. I'm going to listen to it, Sean, because the new one's just come out. The last album, I actually liked that first single that they had because it was much more melodic than stuff they've done.
I mentioned Taylor Swift. Did you know she's dating a Kansas City Chiefs player?
I had no idea. She's got a new album out.
Yep.
So, yeah, I really got to get on that. Okay, thank you to everybody that called in and wrote in and did all the different things that you do. Keep doing that. Keep reviewing. Keep downloading. Keep rating in terms of the things that we are saying. We will be back again later on this week with another show. And until then, and as always, size the day. Tupac!